How are you doing? Welcome to the Fandom Podcast Network. If you've enjoyed the show so far, like Blood of Kings, Culture Clash, and of course, Couch Potato Theater, then stay tuned for our cousin from down under, Adam O'Brien, with Lethal Mullet. Oh, get out of my egg on. Well, coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina on the Gold Coast of Australia, it's Lethal Mullet, a celebration of 1980s action films. Everyone from Chuck Norris all the way up to Jean-Claude Van Damme and beyond. We're going to look at all the films that you know and some that you do not. All here, fortnightly, on the Fandom Podcast Network.
G'day, mate. How you going? This is Adam O'Brien here for Fandom Podcast Network's Lethal Mullet Podcast, where we celebrate 1980s action films. That's right, the 1980s, where you had the likes of Schwarzenegger, you had Stallone, you had even Jean-Claude Van Damme towards the end of the 80s. But the main thing is you had these films which we remember so fondly and so well. And we're going to get right into some of those tonight. We also have a look at one of my favourite films, which is not an action film in the classic sense. It's also a science fiction film also. But this film is amazing because it is a football film at heart. That's right. It's a little bit of rugby union to it, a little bit of maybe even American football. It is known as Blood of Heroes overseas. But here in Australia, we call it Salute of the Jugger. And of course, it had Joan Chen, Rutger Hauer, Vincent D'Onofrio, Delroy Lindo, and many others in it. It also had the lead villain, Toe Cutter, from Mad Max, and also had Immortan Joe, same actor, Hugh Keyes-Byrne, Australian actor, fantastic talent. We're going to be looking at that as our main event tonight, but before we get it too far, we're getting into some of the details on how you can get in touch with this amazing podcast and, of course, this amazing podcast channel here on the Fandom Podcast Network. All right, before we get into the episode tonight, here's where you can catch this show and many others like it on Fandom Podcast Network. At fpnet.podbean.com, which is our main master feed. You also catch the actual show itself on the Podbean app. It's one of the greatest ways to check out the show. Also, if you like all the shows, you can catch them at all these different places where you can catch podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, and of course, Google Play if you're an Android user. Now, also on social media channels, you can find us on Twitter at FanPodNetwork and on Facebook, you can catch us at Fandom Podcast Network's page there at facebook.com/Fandom Podcast Network. If you want to catch us on the email lines, email any ideas you have that the show might be able to cover, any other films you think that have been fantastic, you can catch us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can catch me, the host, Adam O'Brien, at obpopculture on Twitter and, of course, on Instagram as well, same handle. And don't forget to catch me on my other show, The Fantha from Down Under, a fortnightly look at Star Wars from Down Under on Fantha Tracks Radio or FanthaTracks.com. And also check out the great shows that I'm doing here on Fandom Podcast Network's Couch Potato Theatre, where we look at Mad Max with Maximum Couch Potato, and also our brand new show, The Spicing Guild, looking at the adaptations of Frank Herbert's Dune. Now, let's get into the show.
Well, I suppose it's time that we reviewed some film here. What say you? Huh? Oh. Oi! Stay tuned now for all the latest film news, live from Quinlan's Cantina on the Gold Coast of Australia, as Adam brings you the news that's hot to trot.
Alright, there's quite a bit of news going on in the world of film. Not pertaining to just B-grade, but we're going to look at some of the stuff that's coming out right now. Interestingly enough, one of the things I'm really happy with is that we're getting a lot more Star Trek. I've always been a bit of a Star Trek fan, but now we're getting a lot more thanks to streaming services, whether it's Star Trek Discovery or many of the other new shows that we're hearing about, whether it's the one based around Captain Picard, which I'm really keen for. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to see the latter years of Captain Picard. And now we have the news that an adult animated Star Trek series is going to be hitting the screens in some way. And so we've got this, but we've also got TV and all other areas that Star Trek's working on. But I tell you what I'm really keen for is the Quentin Tarantino script of Star Trek that's apparently been doing the rounds. That's been out there for a little while. Obviously, J.J. Abrams is very happy with Tarantino's direction of where he was going to go with a film. So, you know, whether it's using the cast of the current Abramsverse films or the Kelvin era, we don't really know so where they're going to go with that. But all I can say is that Tarantino always gives you surprising stories and films. So at the end of the day, I'm really keen to see what that's going to happen with. But with this one, obviously CBS All Access is the one that's going to be really putting out a lot of these you know, shows, whereas this one, the rumored one about also Khan, where it was going to be about him on Seti Alpha, and actually, you know, the marooning of the ship and basically being left on that planet to die. And, you know, we're going to start to see what happened between Space Seed and actually see what happened to all the way through to, obviously, the film we see later, which is Wrath of Khan. So very keen to see what will happen with that too, because at the end of the day, Star Trek just has so much area you can cover. I'm very keen to see whether they can translate, you know, the animated form into, you know, not just like the old animated series, but something fresh and new for us as well. So you never know. Liam Neeson got another new film out, of course, Cold Pursuit. Trailer has just come out, so that it's out very, very soon. But what's interesting too is George Miller, who obviously very famous for the one, the only Mad Max franchise and many other films. He's about to direct a movie called Years of Longing. Again, not much known about that one too, so good to see he's back out doing those as well. Now, for you Australian fans out there who are still going out to all those stores with DVDs and Blu-rays, may want to go and check out some of the great ones that are now starting to close down. That's right. We've got a lot of places, like, obviously, first one is Kmart here in Australia has now stopped serving DVDs, Blu-rays, etc., hard copies of films. The only way you can get films now in a lot of these places is streaming services. I mean, it's the way of the world. It's where we're heading. But must remember, too, at the same time, that you can still get films at JB Hi-Fi's and Sanity's as well. Sanity's quite a great store here in Australia for especially old action films. You can find the Blu-ray of Jean-Claude Van Damme's Kickboxer still out there as well. So definitely check out those shelves. Another one, Cyborg, which is one we'll cover here in a couple of months' time. Jean-Claude Van Damme's film, which of course was originally going to be Masters of the Universe 2. So we all knew that that had a bit of a history, that film. We're going to be talking about that. Again, it's one of those interesting films which, is, you know, comes up quite good on Blu-ray for what the cheap, low-budget film that it is. And same with Kickboxer. I love some of these old soundtracks. We're going to talk about some of the music of those as well in upcoming shows. So I'm really, really keen. In the next show, you'll also have my full review of First Man, which I'm going to see this weekend here in Australia. I've been hearing really good reviews about it. I've been seeing both online and radio interviews with the cast and stuff like that. Very interested in it. The reviews across the board have been very interesting. So, very keen to see the film and see what we've got coming. So, without it really going into, I suppose, the idea of NASA itself. I like the idea that it's a film about Neil Armstrong, which, again, classic, you know, piece of history that we really, at the end of the day, you know, we know all the events, but it's going to be great to really just get into what did this man go through to become the astronaut and, again, the historical figure that he was. So I'm going to check all that out and have a review for you in an upcoming episode. All here on the Fandom Podcast Network. So what is the latest on DVD, Blu-ray, and more? We're going to look at it here on Lethal Mullet. We're going to tell you about some films that haven't even been released here in Australia yet. That's right, Australian Distribution, our lovely old friend. That's right, We're going to be looking at films which you can find on Netflix. We're going to look at find films that you haven't even seen on DVD here in Australia, probably since VHS. All here on Lethal Mullet. All right, let's start with some films which haven't been released here in Australia on Blu-ray. And I don't know whether it's to do with Australian distribution in this regard, because there is Blu-ray editions of these films overseas. And there's, of course, Jean-Claude Van Damme's MGM film. It's also, I think, distributed by 20th Century Fox. And that is, of course, Bloodsport. Now, the DVD itself is readily available everywhere. Again, one of those cheap DVDs that came out very early on. And you could find these, particularly in Australia, if you're around a Woolworths supermarket, they're usually at the front counter. So if you go to the front counter, there's usually a wall of MGM DVDs. Now, this is before, obviously, Kmart and Big W decided to take a lot of those DVDs off the shelves and move towards the streaming as the only way that we can get these films. But if you're lucky enough, you get the 88-minute version of Bloodsport, which I guess is the theatrical cut, on DVD, and it's quite a good little package. Again, I've had multiple editions of Bloodsport on VHS over the years, and I think the last one I picked up was in about 2002, before VHS was pretty much phased out from most retail areas. But again, this is the story of Frank Dukes, who is takes part in the Hong Kong Kumite, Kumite where all fighters from across the world find out who is the ultimate warrior. And, of course, we've got characters there all across the board that make such an amazing fight film. There's not many fight films like this that can really give you, first of all, the first film for a major action star, which is Jean-Claude Van Damme, but also getting some classic actors in there, like, of course, Forrest Whitaker starting out here as one of the CIA agents that's hunting down Frank Dukes when he goes AWOL to take part in the Kumite. One of the great things about this film, too, is we get Bolo Yeung, who is such an amazing physical talent when it comes to strength and, obviously, martial arts. For such a big guy, he's quite quick in the film with his movements and stuff like that. And I remember a couple of years ago seeing a YouTube footage of Jean-Claude Van Damme and Bolo actually meeting together again. I think it might have been in Hong Kong as well, where they haven't seen each other for almost 20 years. So it's interesting to see that. And I think they were even talking about, at one stage, working together again. Of course, they've worked a number of times on this film and later on Double Impact, on one of many of Jean-Claude Van Damme's films where he plays brothers or twins or basically two lots of Van Damme in the one film, Double the Van Damage. But the film still looks good, still looks clean, and of course, one of the great things about it is it started off his run of films with Sheldon Lettich. And again, produced by Mark DeSalle, they went on to work with Van Damme in other films as well. So again, you can find the DVD, but come on, Australian distributors, can we please, please get a Blu-ray edition officially out here in Australia? One of the films we're going to be talking about tonight is, of course, Salute of the Jugger. So we'll be talking about that a little bit later, but if you want to get it in addition to this, you can get it on DVD here in Australia, and it's by Hopscotch Entertainment, which usually do a lot of cult film, a lot of hard-to-find film you'll find on these ones. But this 90-minute version, which is set in the 4-to-3 aspect ratio, so set for television basically, is almost directly from the VHS edition. But don't let that hold you back from actually getting the film. The film is fantastic. And the actual colour of the film, everything is really prominent. So it's really good. For a DVD, standard edition, it is amazing. And as it describes on the back, it's Logan's Run meets Mad Max to a certain extent. But I think this is really a football film in Mad Max, of course. You've got some amazing stars in this film, which we'll go into talk about some of what they brought to that film in our main event a little bit later. The other one is, of course, the widescreen remastered edition of Future Cop. Now, here's another one which you can get a Blu-ray edition of. It is in Australia, so you can find it. It may come through, though, as Trances here in Australia, because, again, it was known as Trances overseas. Future Cop here and a couple other countries of the world, too. The edition's fantastic, as it's got some archival interview, but main thing is it has amazing audio commentary and really gets to some of the background of how they brought the universe of Jack Death together in this amazing film. So go and check those out. Again, these are all DVDs, and we really would like to see more Blu-ray editions of these here in Australia. So please, Australian distributors, producers, please bring us some of these ones without us having to find it overseas, whether it's through Amazon or vice versa.
Oh, hello. Welcome back to the show. And, of course, here on Lethal Mullet, we always look at great films you've never heard of. You've never probably heard of half of these films, but we're going to be getting right into the heart of it here on Lethal Mullet.
All right there, folks. Let's chat about the one, the only, Salute of the Jugger, otherwise known as The Blood of Heroes. That's right. Otherwise, it is basically one of those films that has two names all across different parts of the world. This is a great little film that's a little bit like Rutger Hauer's Split Second. You know, they're a little bit lesser known around the world, but back in the 1980s, it was known for its amazing VHS covers. Across the world, there's different editions of whether it's the poster or, in this case, that amazing sort of, it looks like an arm wrestling, if you like, front to the cover. And you could definitely tell straight away by the look of the uniforms, or in this case, the look of the costumes, that this was post-apocalyptic Mad Max sort of world. And of course, shot in Australia, of course, which gave it that look of Mad Max, which I think the director, David Webb Peebles, or known as David Peebles, was going for. Now, Rutger and David had worked together on Blade Runner. David was one of the second writers on the script of Blade Runner for Ridley Scott. And he's put together what is, I think, one of the best post-apocalyptic films, which, again, like a little bit like Beyond Thunderdome, doesn't really have a main bad guy as such. I mean, there is an evil sort of main guy and a henchman, but it's not really about that. It's about a group playing football in some ways, a post-apocalyptic football team going from one part of Australia, or in this case, the one part of the wasteland, to another, playing each team that they come across in each town. We have Sallow as the main veteran, played by Rutger Hauer, and he's basically, I suppose, the guy that's going to teach, or the player that's going to teach all of the younger team members how to play. He has Delroy Lindo and, of course, Anna Katerina as his main two long-time veterans as well of the game. And they also have Justin Monjo as Dog Boy, who I think has an amazing part in this film. He's kind of like, he's the one that doesn't want anything to change, even if he gets injured in the game, which he does at the start. It's the way that, of course, Kidder, played by Joan Chen, gets a chance to basically be part of the team. So the film is shot largely in the Australian outback, and it really, again, gets that real tone of, I think, looks more less like Road Warrior and more like Beyond Thunderdome. It's beautifully shot, and there's a few Australian actors in there. Obviously, Hugh Keyes-Byrne, who played Two-Cutter in Mad Max, and, of course, Immortan Joe in Fury Road, is part of it as well. But the film is literally that. It's a young apprentice in the name of course, Kidder, seeing that Dog Boy's injured, and that when she versus that team, she sees just how strong Sallow is, and the fact that he's played in the leagues. Now, the leagues is basically the big time of the game of Jugger. So you get that chant at the start of the movie. He goes, Juggers, Juggers, Juggers coming, Juggers, Juggers are coming. And it gets the teams together to form the game. And again, the great thing about it is, even after each match, they, you know, they've smashed each other with these huge sticks and different chains and goodness knows what for a dog skull. That is basically it. So it's like a football match, but you have a skull of a dog to basically race from one side to the other. And you've got to get through armed opponents who are going to try and put you down and lock you into submission so that you can't get that trophy at the end of it. And it's counted by stones. So you've got a counter off to the side of the game, literally throwing stones. And it could be 100 stones. And so he'll just hit this gong with stones until it's out of it. And that's the length of the game as well. So it's very simple. And if anything, I think a very great way of really pertaining that the fact you've got 90 minutes in a film for people to really get used to what the game's about and how it is there. So we're not really given much about outside of that, what the game is. So really, when you look at it, it could be considered any other game, whether it's baseball, football, whatever. But that the idea is that people, no matter how the world has become, whether it's this wasteland or why, it doesn't really say why, but outside of the fact that there's still people living in the world and they're still trying to survive, we get a chance to see that they've got to entertain themselves. A little bit like Thunderdome in some ways, but this is that sort of next level. And I think it's really very close to what it should be in some ways. So, I think it gets close to, the likes of Mad Max and stuff like that. I think the environment does a lot of it for it, but the work that they've done on just setting up this journey for the team to go across is really, really well done. So obviously they go through a place of the Nine Cities, which is buried basically an underground sort of section of old city and stuff like that. And that's where you find the League and basically the real heart of this empire of, corrupt sportsmen, corrupt, in this case, gambling and stuff like that, to really take it where it needs to. And of course, the team itself is trying to build towards that. But then Salo has his own past, which you get to see. Yeah, he was once one of the League. And we get to see how that happened. And again, you don't need prequels and all that sort of stuff to do it. It's through the great acting of Rutger Hauer that really shows itself. Now, me, as a Rugby League fan, this is why I love this film. I mean, it's always been one of my favourites when I've seen it on TV or whether it was on back on VHS. Again, it had that really good Velcro cover. So it had a silver cover with the arm wrestling sort of arms at the front. And then what would happen is you'd open up and then would be the actual case inside. And again, we do miss all those great things now with the likes of the smaller packages we get with Blu-rays and DVDs. So I would really like to see an addition to this with those covers, which, I mean, you've got with Dark Crystal that I picked up. And, of course, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, all from JB Hi-Fi. So go and check those out. The film itself gets a 3.5 out of 5. I think it's fantastic. I almost wish it wasn't so short. But the rewatchability of this movie is just bang on perfect. So I love it. I know you'll love it. Go and check it out. Make sure you get it. If you find it on Blu-ray, wow, go for it. It's worth it. This is Adam O'Brien, and we'll catch you next time.
G'day mate, how you going? Welcome back to Lethal Mullet. Here, halfway point of our podcast, we always have guests on the show to chat a little bit about their love of 80s action cinema. And it has to be at least close to B-grade, because that's what we're getting is the hidden gems. But this film is not a B-grade. This film is one of the hard-hitting, amazing action films, which you may have seen, possibly, or one of the terrible sequels that followed it. Let's just say there's a few. There's even comedies based on it too. And let's put it this way. They take the word force and turn it into farce. That's right. We're talking about Delta Force. And joining me is the co-host of many shows here on the network at Phantom Podcast Network. And he's a co-founder along with Kevin, the Raider Nerd writer. We have Carl Wagner. How you going, buddy?
Doing good. Does that kind of make me your boss right now, Ben?
It does.
So, yeah. Now, the Delta Force, I think, is one of Chuck Norris's more interesting films because it was one of his more mainstream marketed films. But I think it kind of falls into that, I don't want to say full-on B movie, but kind of A-minus movie that gets dragged down to a B because of, like you said, all of the really bad sequels they did afterwards.
Except the second one I actually quite enjoyed, even though it's nowhere near the quality of the first film. I enjoyed, the sort of, I suppose, the it was 90s. That second one is definite 90s material, but you could tell they moved it to more just a solid Norris vehicle. You know, it was more of the lines of all of these other action films. But this is really, I think, not just a Norris film, this is a Lee Marvin film.
Oh, yeah. This was one of his last films, too, I believe. But, you know, one of the things that's, too, is when you talk about the cast, it's quite a cast in this, and we'll address it. But first and foremost, why this can qualify as a B movie, because one of the kings of 80s B-movies was in this film, and that is Steve James, who played Bobby.
I know. And, of course, we know that he went on to do many of the canon films, along with Michael Dudikoff, with American Ninja 1, 2, and many other films.
Yeah, but you go down the cast list. Let's hit some. This movie came out in 1986. So, we, of course, obviously, the great Chuck Norris, Lee Marvin, Robert Forster, George Kennedy, Robert Vaughn, Shelley Winters. Kim Delaney was in this film. So there were some names that were in this film. But, you know, this was such an interesting film when it came out because it was actually kind of written to take place off of something that dominated the news the year before, and that was the TWA hostage situation on that plane.
That's right. You got to think about the time. I mean, 86, a few years after, was it the SAS stormed the, was it the an embassy somewhere overseas as well? And we started to see the counterterrorism forces of the SAS, so the regiment from the UK. And we also get to see a lot of those. I think the early 80s was really starting to deal with that in film because it was a new thing. People hadn't really seen that on screen as such. And Delta Force really was one of the first real ones to push it in the limelight. I mean, it was a movie where we started to see a completely different type of soldier.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I know one of the things, too, with this movie was one of the big things that was hyped, especially at the time of it, was this movie kind of, they said, would be, this is what would have happened because at the time before, right before they surrendered on the TWA fight, Delta Force was actually set to go in. And they, this is kind of like, this might have been what would have happened if the Delta Force had went in. And then, of course, Cannon Films put their extra twist of action on it.
They certainly did. And, of course, one of the great things about this movie is when they do go in, you have that amazing da 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 da, that little Delta Force lead-in music, which a little bit like a lot of the Cannon films or a lot of the B-grades, they had that little hook that they had with each film. And this one in particular had a great little musical note.
Yeah, it really did. It had that stood out, and they played that song all throughout the film. And this film had some great action scenes, some great military scenes. When the Delta Force storms the terrorist base in the Middle East, that was a great scene. And I think one of the all-time classic moments, there's a couple of classic things that I remember, especially in the action scenes, and this is there was a scene where Chuck Norris grabs a cable with his glove and zip lines down and like shoots like 10 of the bad guys as he's zip lining down, and he's bouncing so hard on the line, I'm just waiting for it to snap. And then there's another scene where him and Steve James, this character Bobby, are the only two left as they're waiting for all of the terrorists to return back, and the rest of Delta Force is coming, and they each have a bazooka, and they just they basically blow up the place with these two bazookas as the terrorists are just storming in. And I remember so many people saying, well, you could have at least waited until they were inside.
Yeah, you've got to remember that it's also a great little point in this film where we get a Megaforce moment.
Oh, yeah, you get a couple of Megaforce moments in this film. A couple of vehicles kind of Megaforce-inspired. Both the motorcycles the Delta Force used, and they also had a dune buggy-type vehicle that they used as well. But the motorcycle, especially with the machine guns on the front and then the mortar coming out of the exhaust. I'm like, that might not be the best design idea you could have.
You know, we had some interesting motorcycles in the 1980s. We had Galactica 1980 with the flying Viper cycles or whatever you call those. We had, obviously, in Genesis Climber, Mospeda, which is, of course, Invid Invasion, those amazing cyclone mecha. But, yeah, then we have these sort of bit more real world but still fanciful motorcycles. And then, of course, with deeds, not words, Megaforce. Flying bikes, you know.
Come on, the greatest flying vehicle of all time. What are you talking about?
yeah, true. No, this is true. But if you look at it, this film is also as a vehicle, as a film itself, is one that was copied numerous times. One of the biggest ones was Michael Biehn and Charlie Sheen's Navy SEALs. It's pretty much part and parcel exactly that, but using the Navy SEALs as the vehicle, well, as the main viewpoint. And you can even see, in some ways, Chuck Norris's idea of doing these sorts of films was then copied by Steven Seagal, because he always surrounded himself with top A-list talent, or at least great character actors like this film, to make him better, because he's not an actor by trade.
Yeah. No, and one of the things that I always found very interesting about Delta Force, too, was how it went from very hitting real world hard in the beginning of the film for about the first hour, and then it goes Cannon Film off the rails action in the last hour. And that, I think that was something, it was a very interesting mix in this particular film.
Oh, yeah. Would you say it's something to do with maybe Cannon running out of film money?
You know, yeah, like, well, part of that, I mean, that's always something notorious with Cannon. But I just think, too, it was kind of like, okay, we've covered the real-world aspect we wanted to cover in this to kind of draw people in, and now we're going to go crazy all-out action. I mean, of course, you've got, towards the end, the classic fight, Chuck Norris karate one-on-one fight as he fought off Abdul, who was played by Robert Forster. Of course, then they rescue the hostages, and you only had two deaths in the film as far as what you could call the good guy side. You had the one Navy SEAL who was killed on the plane, and then you had one member of the Delta Force, Pete Peterson, who was played by William Wallace, and who made the line famous in the movie, "I will see you when I see you."
Yeah, you know what's great about it too? We've got real servicemen here as well. Chuck served in the military, and of course, Lee Marvin is a veteran. So, I mean, it was great to see the two of them bring a little bit of that real-world military. I think just the aspect of their lives, the seriousness of what it is to serve your country and do it in such a way that it gave respect to those around them.
Yeah, in fact, I was just looking it up on IMDb. His role as Colonel Nick Alexander in the Delta Force was his last role.
Oh, wow. There you go. Lee Marvin. After probably, what was the other big military role of the 1980s he did was Big Red One with Mark Hamill.
Yeah, well, of course, you can't talk about Lee Majors without talking about the Dirty Dozen.
Oh, yeah, big time. You have to. I mean, that's it. I mean, did he just do the first one? I can't remember.
He did the second one, too, The Dirty Dozen Next Mission, which was a TV movie in 1985.
That's right. I remember seeing the third one where I think Telly Savalas came back as a different character.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I remember there was so much interesting in this film. And like I said, I'm looking at kind of the history of it here as we're speaking. It had some interesting things to it here. I was looking at it. It came out, was release date. It was a Valentine's Day movie. Hey, there you go. Had a projected budget of $12 million, made almost $6 million on its opening weekend, and actually made money USA gross of $17,768,000.
Bloody hell. That's brilliant.
Yeah. What's funny is a little trivia. Alvin Silvestri did the score for this, and it gained a new life on ABC Sports, was introduced into their Indianapolis 500 broadcast from 1988 to 1998, and again in 2001.
Wow. Popular little bit of music, that.
Yeah, exactly. And a little kicker, too. This movie was cut about 8 and 9 minutes in Norway to get a 16 rating for its cinema release.
So they're taking some of the blood and guts out, basically.
Yeah. And here's a thing, alternate casting. Charles Bronson was supposed to be originally Lee Marvin's characters.
Oh, and wow. Playing Actually, Colonel. That makes sense, because you got to remember, he was part of the Cannon films with, wasn't the first death, which I think was from the sequels on.
Yeah. And here's a kicker. This film cast includes 4 Oscar winners, Lee Marvin, Martin Balsam, Shelley Winters, and George Kennedy, and 3 Oscar nominees, Robert Forster, Robert Vaughn, and 1 Liam Neeson.
Oh, wow.
I think he was an extra in the film at this point, but...
Oh, wow. Yeah, he probably would have been back then, because you think about it, he didn't really break even until probably the late 80s, early 90s, you know, really got into... his first big one was Darkman.
Yeah, yep. The motorcycle Chuck Norris rode in this film was a 1985 Suzuki SP600.
See, folks, I love Suzuki. That's why I drive Suzuki. And Chuck does too. It's great. But, you know, the other thing about Chuck at this time, hadn't done Walker, Texas Ranger. He was really riding high on films like, was it Lone Wolf McQuade? All that sort of stuff, really starting to move in.
Yeah, this was a little bit before Walker, Texas Ranger. You look in his timeline of movies. This came in 86. He had just done Invasion USA, was his last film before this. He had done the Missing in Action films and Lone Wolf McQuade. After this, he did Firewalker. And then he did He did one more Braddock film, Braddock Missing in Action 3. And then he did Delta Force 2 in 1990. And it was a good while before he got... He didn't start Walker, Texas Ranger until 1993.
It was the mid-90s. Yeah, and you think about it too, this is at a time where Canon had picked up also the Missing in Action franchise. Obviously, they, as we just said off air, the second film was actually the first one originally, set in a POW camp.
Yeah, so and that was interesting. So Chuck had a great run of movies in those in the mid-80s. I mean, you look at it was really from, I would say, he really started taking off in 1980. He did a few things then, but 1979 he did A Force of One. Then it was The Octagon, then Eye for an Eye, Silent Rage, Force Vengeance. 83, I think, is one where he really kind of started. Because 83 he did Lone Wolf McQuade, then it was the Missing in Action films in 84 and 85, Code of Silence in 85, Invasion USA in 85, and then Delta Force in 86, along with Firewalker.
That's right. In fact, we will look at Octagon in a later show, which is one of my more, you know, it's an early film that Chuck did, but there's some great talent in those films back in those days too. So we'll give that a bit of a look too. What are some of the scenes that you enjoyed the most in these films?
As far as the Delta Force goes, I think again the raid on the terrorist headquarters was very well done, and actually had a lot of interesting moments in it too, from them going in through the water and then having a couple of different teams. And I thought actually, you know, the deployments that they did at the time were probably pretty realistic. Yeah. I think they were really, that was something Chuck Norris and Lee Marvin were both very big upon, was they did had people from the Delta Force kind of do some of their basic training. Obviously they weren't going to reveal a whole lot, but I thought those were well done. I thought there's a lot of good emotional scenes on the airplane early in the film, especially there's a scene where they ask one of the stewardess to call out names, and it was all the Jewish people, and she's like, I can't do this, I'm German.
Yeah. I remember that point. Yeah. Again, extremely well acted for a film which, you know, is a straight-up action film when you think about it. And I think one of the things that got me was the camaraderie of the Delta operators in this film.
Yeah, especially you had kind of the four main people, where you had Bobby, Chuck Norris's character, Lee Marvin's character, and then Pete, played by William Wallace. They were kind of close. I mean, Pete was kind of Chuck Norris's protege a little bit, and he was the one character that gets killed at the end of the in one of the final battles at the end of the film. And you know, he had a great relationship with Bobby, who is of course played again by the classic Steve James, who left us way too soon.
Way too soon. Yeah, definitely. And what I loved about, like, Steve brought that to every role, that sort of sense of bit of competitiveness, because he's an amazing physical actor when it came to doing the action, and obviously a very serious martial artist as well. But taken well before his time, I think.
Oh, yeah. F cancer, as they like to say.
Yeah, that's it. And, you know, you've got to think about it too. This is, you know, at the start of a lot of people's careers. I mean, you know, Chuck obviously on his way. But there's a lot of people that you consider mentors in some ways. I mean, Lee Marvin, in some ways, when you go back to his days, you know, in the age that Chuck was here, yeah, it was kind of like the Chuck of the old days.
Well, and even you think about it, you had another legend in George Kennedy.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah, yeah.
That's right. So you had a very interesting mix at the time of young Hollywood and old Hollywood in this film. And like I said, it works off well. I'm with you. I don't necessarily consider this a full-on B film, but I think where it kind of falls when you look at the 80s, I can easily identify as one. But it's definitely one of those higher-end B films that falls right on that borderline.
Yeah, exactly. One of the things I think, too, is, you know, it's rough. Don't get me wrong, but I think some people really have in their mind's eye where some of these actors have done, whether it's action films or have they done enough themselves to warrant being in great films and stuff like that. People have it, like George Kennedy, perfect example. He was in Magnificent Seven sequels. You know, like he's such an amazing talent. You look back, you think, okay, Delta Force he was in, this. He's in a lot of action films. I think, if I remember, Iger Sanction, wasn't he in that with Eastwood?
Yeah, and he was also in a ton of Westerns as well.
Yeah, amazing actor. I've always loved his work. I think it was fantastic. And that's what I like, looking at some of these films, some of the times these guys were on, and going back a step and think, what were they, you know, doing themselves to get into those early action films, and you know the different styles of action films that we've had leading up to, because westerns were probably the biggest, probably what, 50s and 60s,
yeah,
as we're moving across. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. One of the things I think too is you can start to see that Chuck was moving out of just being the action guy, you know, just doing the action. He's starting to enjoy action films.
Yeah, and he's starting to enjoy acting more too.
Yeah.
He did.
I think you sort of nailed it. Like, he's, you know, the one-liners. He realizes he has to deliver it a certain way. And, you know, a lot of people will smile. You know, like even Arnold will do a bit of a smile now and again. But even Arnold knew to start doing it with a straight face because it's, you know, it comes off as cheesier, you know, like, don't forget to send me a copy. You know, when he says that, it's done in such a way, it's like, is he really saying that as a joke or not? And Chuck does that, and he does it extremely well. And I think a lot of them got it from Eastwood.
Yeah, I think some of Eastwood, and I think even, you know, a few other of the late 70s action stars as well, as they kind of developed. But, you know, like I said, the big thing with too, when you look at Delta Force, is it's really it's got the mix. It's got a lot of drama in it early on. And like I said, it's such a, you can really define it by the split point where it goes from hostage situation to all out military situation.
Well, it does. You know what? I've always thought it should have a dub, and it should have a dub where the guys are starting to gear up. Cause I want to hear Arnold's voice in there go, Uzi 9mm. And he goes, hey, just what you see, pal.
It's times like this why we wonder why we let him have a podcast on the network. So I do have to know, since we are here, what is the official mullet rating on the Delta Force?
It is 4.75 out of 5.
Yeah, that's a lot of mullet. That's quality 80s Chuck Norris mullet.
Now, to give you an idea just how much I love Delta Force in comparison to our main event film here, which only gets a 3.5 out of 5 mullets, that is, of course, Salute of the Jugger, but only because the release that they put out is in 4:3, which is television format. They haven't actually made a proper release for Australia. So if the Australian distributors decide to finally give us a Blu-ray of that with proper formatting, proper layout, I'll give it 5.
Ooh, you heard it there, Australia. He's calling you out.
I'm calling you out. I'll pull you on the mullet on that one. Now, we have to talk about, obviously, we have a show going out in the next couple of weeks by the name of The Spicing Guild. It's a Couch Potato Theatre special on Frank Herbert's Dune, and, of course, one with David Lynch directing, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. We're going to be doing a lot of Dune stuff here. We're going to talk about the Dune film of 1984. We're also going to talk about the Dune miniseries as well, which I'm excited about. And of course, you've got our good friend Din coming on each show to talk about the books.
That's right. And it is a real feast of information when it comes to all of those. And of course, get our thoughts on it too, because, you know, we all have different thoughts on how those adaptations went. None of them exactly like the book. But again, it's a little bit like Blade Runner and its source material, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep. The different kettles of fish, you know, at the end of the day, you've got one, which is a literary, you know, volume. So you're going to have so much in the thoughts of the minds of the characters, but you've only got 2 hours to put that on screen. It has to be a visual feast on film.
Yeah. And of course I know too, we talk a lot about what's coming possibly with Dune with Denis Villeneuve as well. So that's quite interesting as we speak about that too. So that's going to make a very fun Couch Potato Theater series. And we got one more Couch Potato from your previous series that's going to be coming soon. A little Fury Road.
Maximum Couch Potato, where we're going to be talking about Fury Road. And of course, this little fella, Mr. Tom Hardy, who thinks he's Mad Max, when we all know you are just the guy with the boomerang from Mad Max 2.
As some theories suggest.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'll say this. There's little hints here and there. George Miller says, nah, it's just a reboot, mate. You know, come on. It's just a reboot, buddy boy. But no, we look at what it could be, and I think they just throw a line in there just to sort of stir it up a little bit with a little wind-up box when he gets out of the war rig. He's like, yeah, it's just like, Could it be, or maybe not, who knows? But, you know, I tell you what, for B-grade movie fans, I'm sure all of you are waiting for this next Rambo film.
Which one are we talking about?
Oh, have you not heard? Rambo is coming out. The next Rambo, Rambo 5.
Oh, yes.
Adrian, I'm a feminine. That's right. And he's in a cowboy hat. Have you ever seen the likes of Rambo on horseback?
Can I just say how sad this actually makes me? Because I think Stallone had found such a great role in the way he had portrayed Rocky in the Creed film and the upcoming Creed 2 film. And I'm kind of worried about this because, you know, Ryan and Arnold both have this little problem where they don't know when to stop.
That's right. They don't know when to just go, okay, maybe we should do grumpier older Arnold and grumpier older Stallone as neighbors. Perfect. Just they are the Walter Matthau and whoever the other guy was of the Howard generation, you know, the grumpier older guys. And that would be hell fun as action movies, but I just don't see it happening. You get more likelihood of getting Dolph and Jean-Claude back together for multiple Universal Soldier sequels.
And there has been talk of a Universal Soldiers remake, so...
Yeah, apparently a much larger budget. Even though I've actually enjoyed the last two, Day of Reckoning was a weird Apocalypse Now style one, which I actually quite enjoyed. And Van Damme was quite extremely weird in it.
When is Van Damme not? Both is a podcast in its own to talk about the other planets both Jean-Claude Van Damme and Steven Seagal have ended up on.
Oh yes, yeah, definitely. And we can't end this podcast without the big belch, as we call it in Van Damme language. Bay!
What he said.
So where can the folks catch you on the web, my friend?
Okay, well, of course you can find me on the Fandom Podcast Network, co-hosting Culture Clash, The End Zone, and multiple other shows on the Fandom Podcast Network, and of course this lovely new show, our newest edition here, Lethal Mullet. And of course you can visit all that at fpnet.podbean.com. And if you want to find me on the social media side of things, I'm on Facebook. You can search the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, or you can find me on Twitter at AKyleW or on Instagram at AKyleFandom.
Awesome. Go and check it out, folks. And don't forget, we've got much more Lethal Mullet guests and more coming on the show. In the next couple of weeks, we've also got Kevin the Raider Nerd, right? So here to chat Invasion USA. That's right. He's put, as he says, first dibs on Invasion USA.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, him and his first dibs thing, yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't bring up the Raiders.
Or the Broncos.
Yeah, either the Kansas City, bring them up all you want. I'm happy with that.
Here's where you can find all the great shows on Fandom Podcast Network. You can go to podbean.com, where we are at fpnet.podbean.com. It's a great way to check out the show, or even download the Podbean app off iTunes or maybe Google Play. Fandom Podcast Network on social channels. You can also find it us on Twitter on the handle @FanPodNetwork. You can also catch us at Facebook on facebook.com/Fandom Podcast Network. You can show all the shows on your iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, or Google Play for Android users. If you'd like to contact us directly, you can find us on email at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can catch me, the host of the show, here at @obipopculture on both Twitter and Instagram. To get your own Fandom Podcast Network t-shirts and other apparel, please visit Fandom Podcast Network store on TeePublic. On iTunes, please leave us a review on iTunes so new fans can find us easier. We love 5-star reviews, of course, but we love general feedback. Please listen to our other podcasts on the Fandom Podcast Network master feed at fbnet.podbean.com. Check out Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. You also catch Culture Clash, the weekly pop culture show. We also have Catch Potato Theater, the guilty pleasure favorites. We also have Time Warp, the Fandom Flashback
podcast. If you're into American football, why not check out The End Zone with Carl Wagner and, of course, Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel. Also have, if you're an Alfred Hitchcock fan, The Good Evening Show. If you're into Star Trek Discovery and, of course, The Orville, you can catch us at Discoville. Also, if you're into Poison, Guns N' Roses, and, as Kevin's brought up, LA Guns, check out the amazing Hair Metal podcast, which is hosted by Kevin himself. So go and check that out. Also, check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, or on the Master Feeder, on the Podbean page. Be sure to email in any movies you'd like us to check out here on the show. And, of course, make sure they're big red and make sure they're good. I'm Adam O'Brien. We'll catch you next fortnight on here at Fandom Podcast Network's Lethal Mullet. G'day, mate. How you going? I'll see you later.